Good morning. You have tuned in to 88.5 KRFY on a Friday. This is June 30th, and this is News of the Week, a new program from KRFY that we are officially launching today. I'm Jack Peterson, and here with me is Mark Warren, Chris Bessler, and Will Love, here to bring you, just as we say, the news of the week. Good morning, gentlemen.
Hey, how are we doing? Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jack.
I think we wanted to start out, before we actually get into the news, just by describing the show that you're about to hear. We're going to be on the air for half an hour, and we're going to come to you every Friday for at least for the rest of the summer, and hopefully into the future beyond that. We are going to today introduce each of ourselves, because we will be functioning as your KRFY hosts for the show, and then in the future, each week we will be kind of trading off on who's going to be your KRFY host, and we'll be inviting reporters from local and regional news media to join us here in the studio to discuss the topics and stories that they are reporting on. I think we've decided to just keep it to a half hour and talk about basically what's been going on and affecting us locally and regionally, and try and keep away from national news topics unless they have a direct impact that's unique to Idaho and different from other places, I guess. Should we kind of go around the horn and introduce ourselves and our voices before we move on further?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, as I said, I'm Jack Peterson, and I host the Thursday morning show here. I'm an employee of this radio station, and the assistant station manager and programming and production coordinator and general technical guy too. I wear a few hats, but this is an exciting program that we've been working on for a long time, and I consider myself part of the group that's been in favor of having something like this on the air for a while. So I'm excited to be part of it.
I'm Mark Warren. I'm a student down at the University of Idaho. I'm back up in Sandpoint for the summer. I'm from Sandpoint. I am the station manager down at the student station. And kind of like Jack, I do all sorts of things down there, production, hosting, stuff like that. I also spent 2 years working at the student paper down there, the Argonaut, writing opinion, writing sports, writing life stuff. And I think, having a local program like this, Sandpoint really lacks a local news broadcast. And I think something like this can be really helpful for the Sandpoint and wider North Idaho area.
And I'm Chris Bessler. I'm one of the hosts for the Wednesday edition of the morning show. My own background is in journalism, actually. I moved to Bonner's Ferry in 1978 to work on the Bonner's Ferry Herald. I say it was a career move to move to North Idaho, which you don't hear a lot of. I've been editor of the Sandpoint Daily Bee for a few years in the mid-1980s. And worked on newspapers and magazines in Northern California as well. Came back here in 1990 and started Keoki Publishing. We published Sandpoint Magazine and Sandpoint Online. So I have a journalism background and an interest in the news as well. I think, as Mark said, we haven't had a local broadcast devoted to news. And my idea for this show, and we'll see how it really plays out as we form the show up over the next few months, is that it should be a place where people that haven't had a chance to read the local newspapers maybe can tune in and catch like the 1 week recap of things that have gone in on in town that would be useful for them to know in their daily lives. And also, I mean, my ulterior motive is to hope that we get people interested in checking out the news. We have a couple of really pretty good newspapers for a town this size, the Bonner County Daily Bee and the Sandpoint Reader, and there's coverage from state publications and regional publications that come this way as well. So there's always a lot of news to talk about.
Yeah, my name's Will Love, and so like Chris, I've got a background in journalism. I worked for 6 years as a reporter, 3 years at the Newport Minor newspaper in Newport, and then 3 years as a sports reporter and editor at the Idaho Press Tribune, now the Idaho Press in Nampa. And then I made a career move, came back to Sandpoint, and started teaching journalism at Sandpoint High School, which I've been doing for, I think, now about 15 years. We've got a student-run newspaper called the Cedar Post, and it's been very successful over the years, and we've actually pushed out some journalists throughout the country and other people that are heavily involved in media. When I got out of working as a journalist, I still kept my toe in it. I thought it was important that I participate, so when I'm teaching, I can show kids some examples of what I do. And so I've done a lot of freelance work when I got done, including for Sandpoint Magazine. I was also a stringer for multiple newspapers covering like the Idaho Vandal football team and other sporting events. And then I kind of have gotten away from that because I got into basketball coaching. And but I still try to keep, again, my toe in the water. I've got a podcast that is devoted to basketball coaching, and I've been fortunate to interview coaches from not only Idaho, but throughout the country, and then in several nations in Europe, Australia, just all over the place, and I now have a newsletter associated with it. So I thought when I was approached about potentially doing this, I thought, yeah, it's not like I don't have enough stuff on my plate. Why don't I do something else? But I like the challenge of things like this. It keeps things interesting, and kind of what Chris and Mark said, like, it is something that I think is very helpful for the community, especially for people kind of on the go that got a half an hour show that you can kind of get a breakdown of what's happened over the last week.
Hey, I have to ask, well, where do we hear your podcast?
Oh, so any, you know, major podcasting app, so it's Spotify, you know, Apple. It's called the Idaho Basketball Coaching Podcast. And so originally it was intended to kind of interview basketball coaches throughout Idaho, but then it kind of transformed I guess maybe evolved. And so, like I said, I've interviewed coaches from across the world. So you can check it out at Idaho Basketball Coaching Podcast. There's, I think I'm up to 84 episodes of it. So it's been something that I've kind of sustained over the last 3 years.
Hey, I got to throw out one brag for you here.
Yeah.
You're the guy that brought home the first ever state basketball championship for Sandpoint with the girls basketball team this year.
Yeah. No, that was, it was an amazing experience. You know, and one of the things here that, you know, people might not realize is that I think my involvement in media, like, has really helped me as a coach because I've learned a lot, because I'm willing to ask questions, go out and interview people. And so a lot of the things that we do with our program have come from kind of my background as a journalist. And then, like I said, I like to also put together the podcast and the and the newsletter to help out other coaches as well. So thank you.
Yeah, cool.
Unless there's anything else, I think we should get into the news.
The news of the week.
The official news of the week. Item number one on our agenda this week, I can just read the headlines here and we can fill in from there. But this comes to us from the Bonner County Daily Bee. Yesterday's Daily Bee, the headline was "Recall Underway to Oust West Bonner School Trustees." And tied in with that story, of course, is the approval of the contract for new superintendent Brandon Durst. The recall effort is underway to oust school district board chair Keith Rutledge and vice chair Susan Brown. The circulated and signed recall petitions were delivered Tuesday to Bonner County Clerk Michael Rosedale, who said the signatures on the petitions are now being counted and verified to ensure each signer lives in the appropriate area. Once the signatures are verified, the board trustees have 5 days to either voluntarily resign or do nothing, which would set the stage for a recall election on the 29th. Then the residents in Zone 2 and Zone 4 of the school district will be eligible to vote in the election. At least 245 people would need to vote in favor of removing Rutledge from office to for that to take place, and at least one more vote than, or at least one more vote than those seeking to retain him. For Brown, those numbers are 177 votes, and be at least one more vote than those seeking to retain her. So there you go. And if they are successful, then the board will be notified, and those would no longer be on the board. The petitioners contend that Rutledge and Brown have failed to fulfill their oaths and to strive to improve education in the schools in the rural school district.
And of course, this is like a two-for-one news headline, because it also is so related to the decision by West Bonner County to hire Mr. Durst as their school superintendent. He is a former, actually a Democratic legislator, but then he ran as a Republican for the state public superintendent of public schools. And he's never lived here. He's never worked for a school district. And he does have qualifications as an administrator. So I think it's on that basis that they decided to hire him. But I think it would be fair to summarize their opponents of his hiring as feeling like this was really a political hire more than a hire based on the actual qualifications of the applicant. And there's been a lot of unrest over in Priest River about this. So the recall came very quickly, and they apparently have they have to verify the signatures right now, but they have enough signatures right now to proceed if they verify and they hold up as voters in that part of the county. So it's going to be an interesting story to see what plays out there, and it's probably going to move pretty fast. As you mentioned, Jack, the actual recall election would be August 29th.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what?
2 months.
2 months away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Less than. Durst, the new superintendent, is can you remind, do you recall the name? Is it the Idaho Freedom Foundation? Is that his organization?
I think so. He's been on the one of the, I think the board member, board member with the Idaho Freedom Foundation too. So that's of course a statewide, I guess you could say it's a kind of a political action group that's pushing conservative causes. It's going to be an interesting, very interesting election to watch there, because we are in the midst of a very polarized time nationally and locally. And I think this is a big reflection of that.
Yeah. I mean, and especially, regarding schools. Did you have anything you wanted to say?
Well, I just wanted to add, one more thing to this that's kind of interesting is that, there was the buyout to the former superintendent, and I know Idaho Education News has asked for information on the how much that payout was, and right now there isn't any information on that. So there's also kind of some potential open meeting violations that might be in the mix right there, and I know that the Idaho Education News reported that they've been in contact with Bonner County prosecutors about or filing the complaint there. So
I was looking into that, and they've filed for records request for emails from the district, and have not gotten it back in the timely manner that they're supposed to be getting it back, which is an interesting interesting piece of this story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I will say that Brandon Durst, or should another superintendent be hired, they're not going to come into an easy situation, because the West Bonner County School District, the voters there just denied a levy. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be operating with and I don't have the numbers in front of me for that, but they're going to be operating with a substantially smaller budget than is projected to be required to meet all the expenses. So they're going to have to come in and immediately start cutting some things, whether it's Brandon Durst or somebody else, or they run another levy election, which this might serve to provoke interest in the school district, and maybe the voters there will say, yeah, we do need to support our schools with and accept a little higher tax, a property tax specifically. Yeah, it's a very interwoven story there that we have.
Yeah, and a story that we'll be continuing to talk about, I'm sure, and as the weeks go on. Mm-hmm. This comes to us from the reader. Moving on to item two on our news rundown. The Idaho Supreme Court has now affirmed the festival's right to ban guns at War Memorial Field. The unanimous decision dismisses the appeal from District 1 Senator Scott Herndon, who promises a legislative solution to loophole in Idaho gun protections now that he has now that the case has gone the other way for him. This is a case that started back in 2019 before Herndon was a state legislator.
State senator.
State senator. And it began when he and another gentleman tried to go into the festival at Sandpoint carrying firearms, and they were denied entry.
They're openly carrying, at least yeah. Herndon was openly carrying, and of course this festival had a policy that you can't bring guns on the field, which, who knows, previous years may or may not have been followed by some people because they were not scanning until just a few years ago. But the festival now is, because there's so much gun violence going on around the country, the festival now is scanning everybody that comes in for weapons or a few other things that you're not supposed to bring into the festival. They actually are facing contracts with the artists that they have to scan for these things and try to keep firearms out. So it for the festival, it's a pretty important thing that they be able to bring artists in, musicians in, and they won't be able to do that if they cannot perform this this function here. So, go for it.
Well, I was just gonna, and it would have ramifications statewide to all sorts of events that take place. I guess the issue arises from the fact that the festival at Sandpoint, while it's a private event, takes place on land leased from the public, which is War Memorial Field in Sandpoint. The top paragraph from the reader, this article by Zach Hagedon, the years-long legal controversy has ended with the Idaho Supreme Court handing down a unanimous ruling June 22nd, upholding the nonprofit's right as a lessee to bar guns from the publicly owned venue. According to the published opinion of the court, Justice John R. Stegner wrote that the issue concerned, quote, whether a private party that leases public property from an Idaho municipality may govern those who come and go from its property during the lease. The short answer is yes, end quote. It concurs with a 2021 ruling in district court that dismisses with prejudice a lawsuit brought by Scott Herndon, and now a District 1 senator, with area resident Jeff Avery, with support from Boise-based lobby group Idaho Second Amendment Alliance and Washington-based Second Amendment Foundation. As far as I can tell, that basically brings the case to a close altogether.
There will be more because Herndon, as you mentioned, is a state senator now. He's already quoted as saying that he's going to try to pass legislation that would kind of expand this right to carry guns on what is publicly owned property, even if it's being leased by a private party. But the ramifications here are so large statewide because municipalities, county governments, school districts all own all kinds of different properties. And in fact, you know, in Sandpoint, and I'm not sure the status right now, but for years, the Sandpoint owned the Bonner Business Incubator in that property and leased it to a private company. So does that mean that that private company that's in that location leased from the city doesn't have a right to tell people that they can't bring guns into their place of business? And that's all around the state. There are cases that can be brought up like that.
Well, I think, just reading through Zach's article, Senator Herndon says that, I think he looks at it from the other perspective that if, that we've got this property a municipality could decide, okay, we're going to lease this for a dollar, and now for years and years and years, and now nobody can bring guns into it at any point, you know. So it's kind of interesting there, looking on that side of, you know, his debate. And then also, you know, I thought kind of interesting, like, you know, looking for the why. And there's a quote in here that says, while property rights are fundamental, gun rights are equally fundamental, and the right of self-defense must be protected on public property. So, you know, right there, it's kind of which of these rights are most important? Well, he sees them as equal. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the case that he's probably going to make as he forms up some legislation to try to change the situation there. Yeah. Because I don't think they can go any farther now. In the state, the state Supreme Court has ruled on it. So it's going to be out of the legal sphere now, and it's going to be over to legislators if they do indeed want to push it. And it'll be interesting to see how much appetite the state legislature has. Legislature, of course, is being reflected in our polarized times as well. We're pretty well dominated by Republican legislators, but there are differences of opinions among the Republicans about how far to push some of these, or you know, the property rights versus gun rights paradigm that we're in here with this kind of situation. So that's another story to follow as it develops here. We'll probably see stuff about that again next January, February, when the legislature gets back in session.
Well, obviously the Idaho Supreme Court made a decision, but like we know, it's not over.
Exactly.
Here's item number three on our agenda here. The Bonner County Commission and the ongoing Fairgrounds RV debate. Just this week, the Idaho Department of Parks and Recreation denied an extension request from Bonner County for the use of a $473,000 grant meant to expand the RV campground at Bonner County Fairgrounds, citing the lack of a completed bid or construction contract as reasons for that denial, as well as the Fair Board's opposition to that project. This comes to us from the Sandpoint Reader as well. The location for the Fairgrounds expansion between the Fairgrounds and Sheriff's Complex proved a point of contention for a vocal opposition led by Sheriff Darrell Wheeler and Bonner County Commissioner Asia Williams, who contest that previous boards of commissioners have unofficially slated the property for a new justice complex. Commissioner Luke Ammett has led the camp in favor and pointed to a longstanding efforts to make the fairgrounds more financially sustainable as key to the project's importance. That's basically where the division lies, and it's been an ongoing subject of debate and deliberation at our three-member county commission. This new extension request will be a setback for the side favoring expanding the RV park.
It's not clear to me what it means is that the county's going to have to put in a whole new application.
Yeah.
And the $473,000 that was already approved is probably it's money that the state's sitting on now that it's not going to be awarded here. And that doesn't mean just because we put in a new application that we're going to get that grant approved again. It is it's a competitive thing to try to get state money for these sorts of projects. So it remains to be seen what the county's next move is going to be on this. And it has been a big source of contention between Commissioners Bradshaw and Ammett on one side in favor of proceeding with it, and Commissioner Asia Williams raising questions about it. And I think that the two-for-one on this story is the county commissioners also this week, Commissioner Steve Bradshaw, he's the chairman of the county commission, he has decided they're going to close the public comment portion of their weekly meetings. They've been getting big crowds of people coming in. It's been highly contentious. They were setting aside an hour to hear people. And he's finally said that he doesn't think it's productive. I think you could say because there's a lot of just straight up arguing that comes out of there. Even some inflamed people getting mad at each other. Mm-hmm. Interesting. You know, well, what would be your take on this, that the county commissioners are now going to not be accepting public comment at part of their regular meetings?
Obviously it's, you believe it's a fundamental right to be able to do it. Now, I guess there's other ways that we can communicate our thoughts to our legislators and stuff like that. And I guess, I'm not well versed on, you know, their ability to do this, so I can't say either way, but I do know that when you kind of read or hear from the community about, you know, the commission, it's an interesting dynamic for sure.
Yeah,
between the commissioners, how they get along with each other, and then how that carries over to the public comment as well.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we only have 3 minutes left. There's one more story that I think we've got to touch on here, and that is goose poop is on the beach.
I know.
And it's not funny, folks, because the city took a very serious step here because the geese have been overrunning City Beach, and they are pooping all over the place. It does feel like an unsanitary environment for anybody that walks on the grass, especially kids. And the city has tried for years to use different methods to get the geese to leave the city beach. However, this last week, they rounded up somewhere between 140 and 170 juvenile and adult geese and chemically asphyxiated them they killed them and to remove them from the city. Now, this story has been covered by the Reader and the Inlander and the Spokesman. I got to imagine the Daily. I didn't see it in the Daily Bee yesterday, but no, it was probably
today. They had a story.
Is that the front page?
Yeah. So, you know,
my goodness.
Chris can remember a time when the Spokesman Review actually had an office dedicated reporter here in Sandpoint.
Yeah.
That was way back in the day. But, you know, obviously they've curtailed their coverage in North Idaho. But, yes, I think this was Thursday's edition. Bonner County was two of the four stories on the front page.
Yeah. And, it's going to get picked up by story – by media nationally, because it's pretty unusual that a municipality takes that kind of action to kill all these animals. And of course, there are some advocates for the geese that are just saying that they didn't try everything they could to have discouraged the geese from being there. I guess there's some kind of thing with lights that can discourage geese, but they have tried over the years dogs, decoys.
The last time this made headlines outside a town was when they established hunting permits last year
to let
people come down and try and shoot the geese at City Beach last fall, I believe, and that was not successful. They only got one bird.
Yeah, the hunters were there. The hunters were eager to do it, but by the it got off pretty late start. By the time they gave them some stations they could shoot from, and by the time they got around to doing it, the geese were basically gone, and they only got one bird. So, but they're going to try that again apparently this fall and see what happens. That the opponents to this whole thing raise a really good point, and that is that habitat is very attractive to geese, and we can take out 150 geese right now, but we could have 150 geese, new, different geese back there in the matter of a few weeks. We'll have to wait and see how that plays out.
Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing, is seeing how effective this is, because so far nothing they've tried has really been effective. And I just think the advocates on the other side saying that this won't be effective, that's going to be an interesting thing to watch, especially as we get into the summer months. We're really getting into tourism season here in Sandpoint, and the city beach is a big part of that.
Yeah, and I'm a beach user all the time in the summer, and I don't like the goose poop, to tell you. But I don't like killing the animals either, so it's a conundrum.
Yeah. It did become not just a matter of an ick factor, but rising levels of E. coli detected in the water surrounding City Beach made it not just that, but also a safety concern.
Yeah.
So
that's 30 minutes, Jack.
That goes by fast. We did not touch on a few things that we wanted to mention. We wanted to talk about the NIC. the ongoing drama at NIC.
Slip it in because it is important. And Mark, you had identified that one.
Yeah, do you want to mention that?
Yeah, the Northwest College Commission's on colleges and universities is coming to a decision on whether to keep NIC's accreditation. This decision should be made within 30 days. This accreditation issue has been going on for over a year at this point. And the loss of accreditation could really affect teens in Sandpoint and their ability to get a college education. I personally was able to get a year of college in high school through NIC. And I think it's important for, it's important for kids to have that outlet that isn't a major university, because it's a lot cheaper than somewhere like University of Idaho. And it is a big way for kids here to, be able to get that college education.
Yeah.
Well, it's so convenient because they can work and head down to Coeur d'Alene a couple days a week
and there's actually a branch campus here for a certain set of classes as well. Yeah. And they can do those classes as part of high school. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If they lose accreditation, it's going to be a big hit. We'll see what happens. And that again, is a place where the polarization is really coming to the fore, because part of the NIC board has been making some decisions that kind of threw the whole administration of the college into question. And that's, I think, what is a big factor in
that
this accreditation.
And open meeting laws and certain things that the board has done to limit transparency.
Yeah. I also want to just mention that that Idaho has abandoned the panel investigating pregnancy-related deaths as of July 1st. We will be the only state without a legal requirement or specialized committee to review maternal deaths related to pregnancy. And that is starting out, I guess, the 1st, which is like tomorrow or something, right?
It is tomorrow.
If I do my math correctly. There is lots more to talk about. You just have to tune in to this program next week, when we'll dive into more of these stories. Thanks for joining us here on KRFY's News of the Week.
Bye now, folks.
Bye. Have a good week. Bye.